It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, we're not afraid, but who's afeard of us? I don't know. You think the big bad guys are afraid of us? I don't know. I mean, you know, it's I don't look at it that way. You know, if they're afraid of you, you know, then I don't know. It kind of plays into their hands. They get a little paranoid anyway. You know, but what if they're just mad at you? Why would they be mad? Let me tell you what makes them more angry than anything else. They, them, those. Those that won't leave you alone. Guys with shiny badges. Guns. It's when you ignore them. Man, they hate that. You respect my authority in the affirmative. Assertively, you will grovel, you will cross the street to come over to kiss my ring. I mean, you know, this is kind of how they're thinking because they worked, in their minds, they worked hard to get that position. You know, they kissed up to the right guy. You know, it's like, you know, I got a shiny badge, damn it, because they have such a low self-esteem or a view of themselves that they have to have that, sustained. I know a lot of people that are like that. I mean, probably performers, actors, musicians. These are the ones that, I mean, they crave an audience. And it's just, it's sometimes, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, it's a motivation for people to do. You know, a lot of the things I'm motivated to do is, you know, growing up redhead, freckle-faced kid. You know, that's why I excelled in sports and, you know, acted the way I did a lot of times and stuff, getting attention and such. You know, I had that redhead freckle thing going on. It's just whatever you get to motivate. But, you know, you got to find out what the boundaries are. And I tell you, life will teach you that. The boundaries are, you know, what Michael Badnarik say, don't hurt me and don't take my stuff. You know, that's the promise of government. You know, at least the government's not going to hurt you and take your stuff. I mean, you know, if you're going to try and justify using government to do that, then, I don't know, it's kind of bad, right? Well, yesterday afternoon I had on the afternoon show Kevin Zeese. He is a progressive. He's got this Voters for Peace and a block of anti-war kind of group. You know, cool, somebody should do it. But I remember him in the 2004 campaign. We were first come in contact with each other and became, you know, acquainted and friends after that. He was the scheduling guy and the head guru media whatever promoter for Ralph Nader, you know, which is a Green Party presidential candidate. And so their whole thing, he's mad at Obama. Obama, you know, still in this war, and they didn't get a single-payer health care thing like they wanted. All this thing was, they're mad because it's just a thing for the insurance companies. Well, what'd you think was going to happen? You know, I'm like, yeah, where's all the anti-war people? Where's them? Where are they? Well, what they're trying to do, they're trying to bring a coalition together. But, you know, they would use government to redistribute when, you know, the top 1% has all the money. And, you know, I'm going, is having the money the crime? Or is it this monopoly on commerce for whatever the heck that they're doing because of government? Well, the government should, you know, not help them. They should help over here. And I go, how about they just leave everybody alone and just let the free market deal with it? No. Why? Oh, let me tell you what government's doing now. California moves closer to banning open carry and registering all long guns in California. Oh, this happened before. We'll talk about it when we come back. And how we got involved in this, and what Sheriff Arpaio had to say about it. Oh, that'd be a good story when we come back. We'll be back in just a little bit.
It's time to declare your independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443. And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, we've got to share a lot of things here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, using the technology of the internet and radio waves and so on, and the archives and such on Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com, where you guys can use it as a tool, too. That's why I set it up the way I did. So, you know, go use it. Waiting on you now. The one thing I promised, I wanted to do this California thing real quick. They're going to try and register... they're going to ban open carry and register all long guns, you know, rifles and shotguns. Why? Because, I don't know, because they can, you know. But I went through this before. It was about 2000. I think it was before 9/11. And California had did the machine gun ban, assault weapons ban, all that kind of stuff they're talking about. That was, what's her name? Boxer and who's the other one there? I can't remember her name. The senators from California. Feingold. Is that it? Yeah, whatever. Doesn't matter. They're all the communists. So what happened was, I think it was Boxer. She banned assault weapons when she's a state legislator in California. That's what launched her into being U.S. senator, because she's against guns. She's from California, no guns. Well, 60 Minutes came out with this big thing that because they did that, there was an enormous increase in gun purchasing. You know, that violated the spirit of the law. But, you know, it was obvious we didn't want people to have guns. So I just like, you know, whatever. But what happened was they classified certain types of rifles. There's this one called an SKS, and it shoots the same round, 7.62x39, which is the same bullet shot in AK-47s. In fact, the SKS was the rifle that was used by the North Vietnamese, and it's made in Russia and China and so on. Very reliable weapon. It's my favorite. It's one of the first battle rifles that I got. It's the one that's by my bed, FYI. You know, folding stock. It's very nice. But the thing is that it's cheap. You could buy them, if you bought five at a time back in the 90s, you'd get them for $69 a piece. I mean, we just loaded up on these things. You know, all my friends, our first guns, you know, we're like, oh, okay, we're going to get an SKS. Well, it's, you know, you'll see in the movies, you have the Vietnamese guys going around with these green, like, bandolier things. You know, it's just called a stripper clip. They put it in 10 rounds, you know, it's done. You can get 20-round mags and all that kind of stuff. Well, what happened is in California, they called them the sporter version, you know, if it had a bayonet in it, because it didn't have a pistol grip. It was like a rifle. But they didn't like it. It was semi-automatic, a very effective battle weapon. And they couldn't craft the law in such a way to ban it unless it had, you know, like bayonet lugs or some, you know, weird stuff. So they big argument in California in the law, the attorney general's office, whether it was banned, not banned, had to register it, didn't have to register it. And they finally said, no, okay, you can have it. Well, then later they go, no, I'm the new attorney general, and gosh darn it, those guns need to be stopped. Well, then the deal was you have to come register them. Well, the NRA was like, okay, well, go register them to make sure you get a receipt, you know, or something. I'm like, what? You know, or no, you had to register them first. Then they called them in. Okay, that's where the NRA, we'll make sure you get a receipt and we'll sue them later and so on. NRA is worse than useless. I don't even get me started. So what happened was they said, you got to register them. Well, that's the first step to confiscation right there. So a lot of these guys, okay, I'm legal, I registered, I have an SKS. Then they came in and said, yep, got to turn them in. But it was a taking. So they said, we got to give you fair market value. So they gave them $300 for each SKS that they turned in. To do what? Go buy another one? You know, what? They go, hey, man, it's takings. You know, we gave you the money. We can take it. Eminent domain on your guns. On your guns. You start to see where this is going? So what we did is we have safe. Second Amendment is for everyone, right? So we sent out emails to all of our friends and activists in California. We said, you know, we're going to provide safe storage for your guns. You just, you know, you ship them over here. We're just holding for you, put it in locker. Kind of, it's all legal. But do it in storage, it's all good. Oh, Sheriff Papaya didn't like that none too much. Calls Ernie, you know, here, and you know you're being taped whenever you're talking to him anyway. And he goes, Ernie, you know, we hear you got a safe bunker that you're going to be putting these in. And I'm like, oh, I already know where this is going, you know. So I go, oh, Judge, you don't have to worry about it. It's not going to be in your jurisdiction. He goes, what do you mean? And I go, yeah, we're getting a public storage facility on the Indian reservation where we're going to store them, so you don't have to worry about it. You know, and I'm going, wow, you guys are amazing. We never took a single firearm. It was just the offer. Hey, you know, anybody wants to come over, we'll store them for you. You know, so it's just that kind of stuff. Well, they're doing it again. You know, I've been through this before. It'll start with, you know, you got to register, you know, and then they're going to take. They already did it. So I'm like, you know, this is the kind of stuff that we go through. You know, my daughter, Sierra, has been producing for me, been a great help. I was so far behind, and she's just, you know, really taking care of business. And she's in there, you know, all this Pastor Anderson thing going on, you know, he was at a checkpoint. He's just like, look, I'm not playing anymore. Bust the windows, tase him, bash his head in, bloody him. And it goes on for a year. We're going to court, back and forth, YouTubes and videos and going. And he was just acquitted, you know, not guilty. All charges. Not guilty. Jurors coming up to him, shaking his hand. Thank you for standing up for our rights as Americans. How about human beings? Okay? So I'm going, you know, this is huge. So he's coming on the show, and Sierra's like, I just watched the video. Well, I'm going, you know, so Sierra, come on in and tell us what your impression is, a young 20-year-old. You know we've been talking. And, you know, when was the first time you started hearing us talking about this?
Last year, I remember Mom always talking about it, and I never really knew what was going on, and, you know, I didn't really care about it just because I try not to get involved in that. And then Mom just went to the trial in Yuma, and she got him on the show for this afternoon, and I just decided to look at the video, and it's pretty disturbing.
But what was your first impression? I mean, you're going, this is like what? This happens in America? I thought this would be like, you know, Israel or something.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, I know that stuff happens, but it's weird when you see it with people you know, just kind of hear about it and stuff, but it was very awkward to see. I just felt awkward watching it. Like, it was hard to watch. So,
you know, well, this is, you know, it's amazing. You know, I'd like to get this perspective, because this is probably the first and last time you'll ever hear Sierra on the radio, because she don't want to play. And I'm going, you know, from your perspective as a young woman, just in the last few months, you've been doing this job, and you've been doing a great job dealing with a lot of important people that have a perspective and stuff that we're able to share. And just getting this by osmosis, just being around all the activists, all the stuff that you see, all the shirts that you're wearing, the, you know, love shirt, you know, all of this stuff that you see, what kind of impact is it? Fresh? Was it new? Did it surprise you? Did you know? Because I know I didn't really hammer on you guys in high school, you know, for you to help. Well, I didn't have you guys out there passing out stuff or stuffing envelopes anymore. I bribed you with pizza and movies when you were little kids. But then, you know, we kind of backed off a little bit. And I said, yeah, it'll come around. They'll see it. What kind of impact did that have on you the last few months here?
Well, it's a lot different now that you're older and you experience more of the things now. Like, it's affecting me a lot more, and I never really cared about the, you know, what was going on in the world. They just like, oh, whatever, you know, oh, they're stealing money, whatever, you know, just kind of, you know, just went out the window for me, because I heard about it my whole life, so I just kind of let it go. But then when I started producing and, you know, starting to get all the guests and hearing all the stories, it starts to affect you a lot more, and then you start talking about it, you know, just out of the blue, you start talking about it, and you realize just how messed up the world is, and how people just think so differently than you. Like, my friends, they think so differently. They want, you know, oh, George Bush, oh, he's great, you know, and they don't understand, and it's hard to make people understand, because they're so set in their ways, and they're so set in just everything. They just want everything to be peaches and everything. So it's
you know, that's one thing that's interesting, because you went to a very nice private school, you know, and we were poor kids, but, you know, we had a lot of good friends. They all treated us well. We got, you know, we on par, and they include us in everything, because a lot of you guys, you're good kids, you know, you're involved in sports, you had a lot of good friends. So when I'd hang out with the fathers or the parents, and we'd go to different functions and so on, parties, and became friends with a lot of them, go on trips and such. You know, they knew that we had a totally different perspective. And you go to the parking lot at your school, and there were W bumper stickers everywhere. And it's all, you know, right-wing stuff. But we get into conversations, I'll tell you. The parents were much more understanding than the kids. The kids knew what, you know, what the bullet points were, and they'd advocate for that. But I tell you, you know, the parents understood, and they are now. I mean, a lot of your friends, we'll say one more segment, because I want to make sure that she shares, you know, now that they've become in the workforce, and maybe their family's not doing as well anymore. You know, the kinds of changes there's been in just the last year or two. People that were riding high in this economy that benefited from the policies and actions of government, and now they're destitute. You know, it's just, it's terrible, a terrible thing to witness and see with your friends and family that you tried to warn them. Well, I'm going to warn you, it's going to get a lot worse. Don't make the same mistake these people did. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
It just ain't the same. Always a change. New days are strange. Is the world insane? If love and peace is so strong, why are the pieces of love that don't belong? Nations dropping bombs. Chemical gases filling lungs of little ones with ongoing suffering. As the youth are young, so ask yourself, is the loving really gone? So I could ask myself, really, what is going wrong in this world that we living in? People keep on giving in, making wrong decisions, only visions of them dividends. Not respecting each other, denying thy brother. A war's going on, but the reason's undercover. The truth is kept secret, it's swept under the rug. If you never know truth, then you never know love. What's the love, y'all? Come on.
I don't know.
What's the truth, y'all?
Come on. I don't know.
Now, what's the love, y'all?
Yeah, that's right. Let's sing it, baby. You know what? Oh, could you get any redder? You know, the one thing that song came from, how do we get that song in rotation, Sierra?
I went to the Black Eyed Peas concert in December, and I've heard that song before. I just kind of forgot about it, and it was when you were actually doing your race against Wayne Allen Root for LNC chair, and he had all the, you know, the love logos and all that, and I just thought about it, so I brought it in, and we edited it and put it up.
Yeah, we have the shirt she's wearing right now. It's love, not war. Because the thing is, Wayne, I don't have any, you know, personally, we get along fine and so on, but he's advocating this conservative lean in the Libertarian Party and really embracing the right, because they think, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. I'm telling you, you know, any kind of collective or party, you're not going to get what you think. You know, it's always advocation for individuals, you know, being able to do what they want and not have anyone speak for them. And that's what we do. And so, you know, and Sierra heard this song. I've heard this song before on the radio. I just never paid attention to it. And you listen to the lyrics and you're like, wow, you know. And this was, I think, 2002, 2003. Black Eyed Peas came out with this song. I'm going, ooh. So we did a sign. We have bumper stickers. We had hundreds of bumper stickers for this that Donna, or your mom, just went out and did them because she was so inspired, because there was a big question mark, you know, where is the love? And we did the love logo, where is the love, with the love logo, and then that square with a question mark in it, which was the trademark for the song. And we do that, and these young guys, we'd go around with those, they're going, oh, yeah, baby, that's what I'm talking about. I got it on my laptop, you know. And so this is, I mean, the sticker on the back of it. So it's so much that we are able to penetrate into the next generation because I had four kids. All you guys and all your friends and all the stuff, and I'm immersed in your world, you know, so I get it. And I tell you, when you guys first started doing MySpace, what was I telling you?
Don't.
I just want to FYI, man. You know, everything you put up on this Facebook thing, you know, the NSA guy's going, thank you for playing. I mean, you know this, right?
Oh, yeah, I know. I don't have any personal information on there anymore other than my name. I mean, other than that, I do have pictures, but that's
about
it.
Get up closer
to
the microphone.
No. I don't have any. I have pictures, but I don't have any, like, phone numbers, address. I never really put where I am or anything like that, so.
You got your pictures of you, your friends, your favorite color, your favorite movies. I don't know, whatever else you put on there. But, you know, it's I mean, dang.
I'm trying to make it easier for them to find me.
Yeah. I don't think they're having to work too hard. You know, that's one thing on the front page of Freedom's Phoenix. You know, a lot of times when people come down, they think they're coming to the Freedom's Phoenix, they show up at my house. Because at the bottom of the front page of Freedom's Phoenix, at the bottom of every page, it has an address. That's my home address. People going, what the heck? Why would you put your home address? So all the good guys know where I live as much as the bad guys, because bad guys know where I live. I want some good guys to know where I live. You know what I mean? So this is it. It's just because whatever, you know, I don't know. Am I allowed not to care? I just don't care. And, you know, and that's been our, pretty much our life, hasn't it been? I mean, you know, it's when I was talking about earlier in the show, our home is just open. You know, it's like you and your friends coming. That was the deal. This is the deal. There are two rules in the house during the high school years, all my 15 gazillion, you know, friends of the kids. You know, I go, one, the last beer is mine, okay? Now, if there's only one beer in there, that's mine. I guarantee you that, okay? That's in the rule number one. Number two, you just start just walking in, especially in the summer, and you find me naked on the couch. Well, that's just the way it is. You're lucky you get what you get, you know? So I had to, you know, take that in consideration and be, you know, more clothed than I normally would feel comfortable in the summer. But these, you know, the kids, they just came in and out, open. But what happens when the man comes to take everything? Well, it's just, you know, we're just camping. You know, we're just there for a short period of time. You know, it's just not, you don't get tied to that. I'm more tied to my family. I'm more tied to the relationship with my kids than I am about any, you know, thing. Well, maybe my hard drive, but, you know, it, you know, there's, you know, yeah, we got, always got computer issues. But, you know, the one thing, you know, we're running close on time. We'll keep her another one. It's in there, go work. You know, it's in there. You know, it's time to lean, time to clean. I got baseboards need to be cleaned. I mean, we know where that comes from. The rest of there's nothing to do. Yeah, I got something for you to do. It's either study, go in the air, or go back there and, you know, hit the grindstone. The way I want to talk about is the progression of the difference in the economic situation of her friends and a bunch of our friends and families that we've known that were riding high like everybody. We were always the poorest, you know, and we took care of business. I mean, we, you know, had a place to live and everything, but we didn't have the new cars. We didn't have the boats. We didn't have the trips. We didn't have the, and if they wanted to include us and so on, well, they would make us their guests, which was very nice of them. I got to go to a bunch of professional football games and so on. You guys got to go on trips. We did a lot of stuff because we had really good friends and they could afford it. Well, now they can't. I mean, it is devastating to see, you know, for us, we're like, woohoo, all our cars' air conditioning work, man. We are in luxury, you know. So that, you're like, Donna's going to recharge the Freon on the Montero. We're like, yay. But others aren't so lucky.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 1-800-313-9443.
Stop me, cause I'm having a good time, having a good time.
I'm a shooting star leaping through the sky like a tiger, defying the laws of gravity. I'm a racing car passing by like Lady Godiva. I'm gonna go, 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 there's no stopping me. I'm burning through the sky, yeah. 200 degrees, that's why they call me Mr. Fahrenheit. I'm traveling.
Stop me now.
Yeah, it's the old man music. That's right. That's right. Yeah, well, what do you think of the music? You know, that's one thing. I mean, it's hip-hop and rocking and decent and doesn't suck.
Well, I've always grown up with that music. We've always been with Queen and all that, so I like it, but it's just funny watching you dance to it.
Yeah, we don't have a webcam in. You know, the one thing I wanted to make sure we got to this is that you guys have remained friends with a lot of your friends from high school and so on, and I always considered them my friends too. You know, I mean, I treated you guys like adults, and I'm always glad to hear how they're doing, and a lot of them are doing really well. I mean, you know, some of them they go on, they're very athletic, they scholarships, a lot of them are doing well in school, getting married and so on. They most of them seem to be pretty, the ones that do have problems, you knew they were going to have problems before you even got out of high school. But you know, how are they doing financially? I mean, in general, I mean, what kind of, how's their life working out now that it's a, you know, years later?
Well, some of them are doing pretty good and others are not, of course, just like everybody else. But As far as the families and everything, I mean, they're obviously not doing as well as they used to, you know, with like, you know, building houses and all that. I mean, it's just not there anymore. So they're obviously not doing as well, but they're still kind of like the, you know, living under the roof kind of thing. So they don't really have to worry about that too much. But
well, what's happened though, what we noticed is that usually as, you know, you have the kids would get a job, they go to school, they go out, they get married, they move out, but that's not happening. Now what's happening?
They're engaged, staying at home, and working yep. for their parents. Mainly, that's what's going on, is they work for their parents, or they work mainly for, like, you know, family or something like that, so they don't really have, you know, taxes taken out very much, or they're just going to school or something like that.
Yeah, a lot of them, they just keep dragging out this school thing. And, you know, this is the point that we've been seeing, you know, for the first time since the Depression, certainly since World War II, there was a graph that we had out that we have a contraction in the creation of new households. Because it was always that you would, you know, have more homes built because people were moving out there. You know, you're not having multi-generational homes. They're like, boom, 18, hit the road, which most of you guys did as soon as you guys could get out. I'm independent. I can leave. I'm be free. And I see you guys now than I ever did when you guys were living at home. So what happened is that you're starting to see a lot of these families, they're not able to afford, they're not able to sustain another separate household. So a lot of them had nice big homes and so on. So all of a sudden now you're having, you know, married newlyweds. They're starting to have children. You got mom staying there. So you got four generations in these homes now, where you would only have one, maybe two, if they had grandma staying with them. This is changing. I see it. I watch it happen. And it's getting to where, you know, a lot of times people, their most prized possession is just their communication with their family. You know, now it's, you know, they're communicating by yelling down the hallway. But, you know, it's that's one thing. You know, Sierra, whatever cell phone she gets, or PDA, her little smartphone, something, that's what I get. Why?
Because I know them, I learn them, and that's my thing. I have to have new phones.
And she shows me how to use them. And you know, it doesn't do me any good if I don't know how to use it.
You still don't know how to use it. It's been like 2 years.
Well, the thing, you know, so it does what I want it to do, you know. And this is, I'm hoping, I really have to step back a lot of times, and they know how much, especially the kids, they know how much of a better deal I got in the marriage of my wife. You know, it's dad and mom who came out ahead on this thing.
You did, for sure.
For sure I win. And I have to keep reminding myself of this. And it's not hard. I mean, I see all this stuff that's going around. And the reason we brought Sierra in today was because of her being exposed to the brutality and the reality of what happened with Pastor Anderson. And it was just things like that. You just go, wow, is it that bad? Yeah, it is. And I have done my best to avoid these kinds of situations. I'll highlight them all to heck, and we'll go out and we'll make a big woo-hoo. So I've got my share of arrest. But, you know, if there's not videotape and the videotaper or the videotape guy taking videotape, you know, it's whatever they said. And the only thing that saved him is that he had a video camera on in the vehicle, and then they had their surveillance tapes that they, you know, subpoenaed right away. I mean, there's like, oh, no, this is a racing crap. And, oh, by the way, we got the camera here, too, and we have. So all that came together, and all they did, they didn't put on any defense. You know, they had the tape. You know, the lawyer went up there, made the argument. You know, Mark Victor, all the motion going through, and then he had one of his, the woman that is taking on the civil suit against the government. Well, he wanted her. You're going to do a civil suit, and you need to be part of this criminal thing. And goes down there for that, and they put on no defense other than just made, you know, this is the, because the pastor made the argument on the tape. He's going, hey, you know what, the Fourth Amendment, Fifth Amendment, you know there are these amendments, right? Let me school you in the Constitution. So he's bringing out all these points that you would want to anyway for the jury. You know, they're watching this and they're like, wow. So they watched an hour or two of tape, you know, different angles and different stuff or whatever, got it all. And they, what else you need to do? Not guilty. So we've had our share. Your dad's been arrested several times. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always for something. And you know, they never charged me, you know, any of these things. They go, you know, and what were you charged with? I was never charged. They just wanted me away. And they always release you. You know, oh, I did tell you this story. When you were, do you even remember when they did that and you kids came down Carl Haight when they arrested me, when Janet Reno came and so on? Were you old enough to remember that?
I don't know. There's a lot of times I remember, but I don't remember like specific days.
Well, she was like, God, what year was that? That was 94. So how old were you in 94?
Five.
So 5 years old. So she was pretty young. And what happened was Janet Reno had come to speak at this thing, and we had signs up that said, you know, re-legalize freedom registered libertarian. Well, that was no way that was going to happen. So they wanted to, because it was over the shoulder where she was pulling in, and we didn't know this, but it would be in the background of the cameras. You know, on television, no, heck no. So all the guys in men in black with the curly things in their ears and the mirror sunglasses, you know, came up and, nope, can't do it. Yeah, I can. No, you can't. Yeah, I can. No, you can't. They, you know, take them out of my hand. You're under arrest. No, man, I made a big snaking deal out of it, and all these people around and do it, and they haul you off. And then that's when the kids and Donna got there, find out, well, yeah, you're too slow. He already got arrested. So they go down to get me. And by then, they had already let me go, and I went right back. So I went in, did the woohoo thing, whatever, and as I'm leaving, they were coming back from trying to find me at the police station and came back, and then all the kids were around my legs, you know, saying, oh, yeah, you know, dad's out and so on. And the sergeant that let me go, he said, look, I can't keep you for this is, you know, jacked up. I'm not playing this game. You know, he was out at the exit, and when I walked out, he saw all my children, my family coming around me, and he's just like, you know, giving me the nod. Yep, yeah, this is all good. And we sued and made a big deal out of it and got a lot of attention. Because think about it. You had the highest ranking law enforcement official in the nation come. What's the first thing they do? Take away your free speech. And we were way away from that. We didn't know, you know, that we were just in the shot. You know, that just wasn't going to happen. Of course, we were raffling off AR-15s, too. So they had, we didn't have the guns actually there, but we had pictures and selling raffle tickets. And that was our first funding for our first headquarters. But the this is just, you know, my kids like, yeah, well, your dad doesn't get arrested? I thought everybody's dad got arrested, you know, and, you know, went up against the man. So I don't know how did you see your life growing up, all this activism and all this politics and all me running for office all the time and all that? I mean, did it really penetrate your life? I mean, did you really care?
Not that much, no. But in high school, I remember in my economics or government class or something, we had like a fake ballot that was going around and you were on there. And everyone was voting for you, and you won in my class, but I didn't vote. I just didn't vote because I was just told not to vote. So I got like an F in that class or for that day because my teacher didn't like that very much.
That you didn't vote for your dad?
I just didn't vote at all. I wouldn't do it.
I didn't even know that. What was your reasoning for not voting?
Because you tell us not to vote. It doesn't
matter. I
didn't
tell you not to vote. I just never advocated for it. You know what happened? I'll tell you what happened was, well, we'd been, you know, all this activism. They knew how corrupt the system was. I mean,
well,
all
yeah,
the lawsuits.
It was after all that still voting stuff. So it was just kind of like, I didn't care to vote. It didn't matter anyway.
So what's happened, though, is that in this last election cycle, it benefits the Arizona Libertarian Party if they have registrations. It keeps ballot status, so we have a voice on the ballot. And so that's getting less and less of a concern to me. But Michael Kilski, the state chair, was over, and we were working on some computer stuff or something. And they were getting signatures and, you know, stuff for a candidate. We help because we, you know, they always go, well, if Ernie helps, then we can get it done because, you know, we know how to do this. Get the people together, get them motivated. Okay, here's your list. We did the pre-calling. You know, we don't need that many. Just go out and everybody go gets, you know, 10, 15 signatures, a bunch of people, and then we're done in a day. We do it on a Saturday before the deadline. I mean, if nobody's doing it, all right, fine. Here, we'll go help it make it happen. Well, Michael, the state chair, came over, and he's just hammering on the kids. You know, just, hey, you need to register. We could use it. I go, hey, man, that's up to you. If you can convince them, it's knock yourself out, man. They're old enough. They can make their own decisions. And I think he got all you guys.
I think I'm the only one that's not registered.
Oh, see, I knew you were my favorite. You know,
well, but mom came around with Barry Hess and all that a few months ago, and she kept trying to get me to do it. And I was like, Mom, I'm not registered. She's like, oh, okay.
Well, I mean, what do you feel about that? Don't you feel a rock to vote obligation? Aren't you a little, you know, you're bad doobie because you're not registering to vote?
No, I don't care. Like, everyone's excited that they have their little registration card and all that. Like, I honestly don't care at all. I know it doesn't matter anyway. It's always just goes out the window. So what's my vote going to do? Nothing. So.
Yeah, see, this is, you know, and I know the audience, you're blaming me, you know, evil. But how could you come to any other conclusion as, you know, I tell you who you can't BS, you know, these kids, you know, and your friends. I mean, I can't even count how many times, you know, your friends come over, well, Mr. Hancock, what about, you know, and all that kind of stuff. Oh, and then the boys, anybody ask me a question, what do they do to them?
Beat them up.
They're just, I mean, they dogpile on the couch, just start pounding them. I told you, you never ask my dad a question, we'll never get out of here. And what'll happen is they'll have a bunch of the football guys over and you have, you know, dozens of you guys strung out through the house on computer terminals or whatever. And then one of the guys, usually Chad, you know, he'll come over and he'll start talking to me, asking, then another kid comes in, and then all of a sudden the party's in the living room, you know, having court, and then the boys come in, oh man, it just drives them crazy. But now that they're getting older, all of a sudden it's starting to come home, you know, everything. And I remember when you guys first started getting your first actual paychecks, you know, because they had a special kind of paycheck they got at the restaurant. It was called cash. But I started getting paychecks. You started noticing all the money got taken out, didn't you?
Yeah, well, now it's affecting everybody because Corsair with, you know, the babies and everything. And, you know, it just starts affecting your life the more you get involved with the world. So it's just, you know, you start caring a little bit more what's going on.
And you're finding out how it's really affecting you. But the thing is, I mean, now that you've experienced your life, you're 20 years old, right?
Yep.
I better get that right. You know, that's mom's job. Keep track of you guys. So at 20 years old, having your entire life immersed in it, even though you're not directly involved in all this, I mean, we had you help a lot and everything and different things, but, you know, really, we haven't really, you know, had you advocate for it or what's your opinion, or you haven't run for office or got that involved or go work for some campaign or any of that crap, you know? We haven't done that to you guys. We just made sure you understood the truth, you know, what's going on. And that, as things really start to, all the stuff that we have been saying for decades, me and your mom just like preparing for, you know, like, our parents are crazy. They put beans under the beds. I mean, you know, they got, you know, do we really have to have that much soap and tampons? I mean, seriously, you know? So this and toilet paper in the attic kind of thing. Well, you know, all of a sudden, are we that crazy anymore?
Not really.
So, you know, have you started to see that maybe because of these preparations and this understanding, are you less fearful?
I'm not really fearful. I mean, I know that obviously, like, I have family and you guys are smart and what's going on. So I'll just haul on to you and you can take me wherever.
You know, and you're always a great asset, but you can't count on us all the time. I mean, come on, you know. And that's one thing about all you kids, are pretty self-sufficient. You know, I don't have to worry about you surviving. And that's such a godsend right there, is that I don't have to worry about them surviving. They will flourish as long as there aren't people aggressing against them. And even if there are, you know, they're able to protect themselves. You know, I remember, you know, the first, have you even fired your handgun?
No, you shot all my ammo.
No, you fibber. You know, that's one thing we get. I did buy, when she moved out, I did buy her a firearm, you know, showed her how to do it and so on. But we haven't gone out. I think I went out to make sure it worked and so on. And then we haven't taken you out. You know, I slap myself. I know your audience is really wanting to beat me because I'm not taking you out. But you've shot, you know, firearms before and so
yeah.
on. So I'm just, you know, this particular one I got for my daughter. You know, what's the first thing I did with Rhea, our oldest? She's 24. When she graduated high school, she's 17. And her and mom went to a defensive training class. Didn't even touch firearms for 2 days, 16 hours of training. And all it was about was being aware of your surrounding and getting away. You know, just get away. You don't have to beat them. You just have to survive them. You know, so that's, you know, I really appreciated that at the time because, you know, that's the first thing, is the best thing is to avoid the conflict. And that's a lot of what we're trying to do on this show. You know, like 4409 says, keep an eye on the pirates so you don't have to. Well, sometimes you're going to need to be at least prepared for when the inevitable comes. I just want you to survive and keep breathing in and out.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. I want to break free. I want to break free from your lies. You're so self-satisfied. I don't need you. I've got to break free.
God knows. And just about everybody else. Hey, Morgan, how you doing, man? Yeah, you know, we got some people coming by saying, yo, what's up? You know, the one thing, I'm really glad that, you know, Sierra joined us for a little bit. And it's just, it's pleasant to be around individuals of my family. And as they get older, they start to realize that, you know, maybe dad's not as crazy as we thought. And you know what really got them is when they started having demonstrations of respect for what we do from, you know, coworkers, you know, their friends. You know, they say, oh, so you guys were involved. Do you know, and this is your dad and your parent and Freedom's Phoenix and Doug just well, co. And they're like, all right, yeah, maybe it doesn't suck that much. The and tell more, move, man. The you know, so what happens is that we have a an opportunity at this time to make a decision. We're going to be making choosing a path that is the same one, or do we choose a different one, or do we you know, take the option of just not choosing a path? You know, I remember a movie with, I think it was Robin Williams played, it was a Dead Poets Society. And he was kind of, you know, doing a demo, takes the class outside in the courtyard, and he says, okay, now just, you know, walk around the circle. You know, just start walking. So they start walking, and then they just started kind of getting in step with each other, and they're kind of, you know, doing the marching thing in step, having a good time, and so on. And one of the guys is just leaning up against a post, and he goes, hey, what are you doing? He goes, I choose not to march. Okay. Cool. And the point he was making is that as you got groups going together, all of a sudden they start getting in lockstep. You know, they start marching, you know, their feet going the same left, right, left, right. And then there's some of those that just kind of, you know what, I'm going to have a different perspective. I'm just going to step over here. Get in line. March around in circles. Get in the chute. If we can instill an immediate concept that it's okay not to be with everybody. It's okay to take a break. It's okay not to choose a side. It's okay to just watch. It's okay. It's okay. Then do we win? Do we gain something from that? I think we do. I think that, you know, the one thing that I've really, the epiphany I've had here recently with my granddaughter is the first social concept that I started to recognize in dealing with other people. The first social concept that she gets is the concept of mine. That's mine. You know what? That's mine. I go to bed with that. I wake up, it's there. I carry it around all day. You take it away from me, I don't like it. It's mine. And that is what we have to beat out of humanity in order for governments to be able to flourish. And I'm starting to see it now. The movie Inception really helped me with this. I can see at the fundamental basis, at the base, at the root, there's something that they have to change. There's this concept of property rights that I live and I breathe and I use my liberty, my hands to create sustenance for myself, you know, so I can keep breathing in and out, food, shelter, clothing. And then the product of that's my property. First thing, Communist Manifesto, no property. Why? Because the benefit of the state, war is the benefit of the state too. It's the ultimate collectivism. So hopefully over the past year, we've been able to share with you the concept of yours, mine, and you're not willing, not able to take it.